is the Vinny White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Technically, it's the Pei Chen Show, but lazy, yeah? Lazy, not hardworking like this guy. Covering her ass. So, Vinny White, normally on from 9 through till 10, but today on from 8 till 10. It's double bubble. It's twice the value. Well, it's free anyway, so it's sort of not really twice the value at all, is it? Just double the amount of bull, I suppose. No, I should upsell, because actually, I'll have you know this here is a good radio show as opposed to my usual drivel. This one, I've made a real effort. It's got stuff, things, and some other bits and bobs. What do you think about that? We've got guests coming up. We're talking about Eat to the Beat, an upcoming foodie event. Sort of thing that Pei Chen would do, I'm going to do. But in a slightly different accent and voice, I would suggest. Then later on, we're going to be talking to Shane. Shane is a man that has boyish tendencies. I think that's a fair thing to say. In the sense that he plays with and enjoys toys. Of the adult nature. Not that adult nature. I mean toys for adults, not cylindrical ones. You know, toys. Remember them? Getting a filthy mind out of the gutter. So we're going to be speaking to him. He owns a toy shop. I'm not even sure that the terminology is correct, toys. But he does own a toy shop called Temple of Toys. So I suppose he calls them toys. I think you could also call them collectibles and or geeky stuff, memorabilia, you know. He'll put me straight. And no doubt he'll chastise me for my instant misjudgment of the geek culture, of which he is very much part, of course. So he'll be on later, the owner and self-described geek of Temple of Toys. Also, backspaceto.ca. We'll find out about that. I think that does geeky events and stuff. So if you're a geek, it's an absolute cracker, this show. And I always feel weird saying that, like it's slightly offensive. But I think it's now in the mainstream culture, geek. I mean, after all, a lot of geeks describe themselves as geeks, so can't be that bad. I'm sure, no doubt, here in North America, it will be underground within a decade and called the G word on Fox News. And then, of course, we have a wine testing thing. Now, this I'm particularly looking forward to. I did say to Angela Aiello, the president of the Aiello Group, that you're welcome to bring some wines in, but don't feel obliged. Now, I'm hoping that being that she works in wine, she'll go, I'll bring a couple of bottles in. But I don't want to say it's going to be a tasting. It'll be an interview about wine without all that pretentious pomp and circumstance that's so often the case with wine. She's great. I really like her from what I've seen, read and watched on TV of her. She also happens to be quite attractive, which is, you know, it's just a bonus for me. It doesn't mean a lot to you unless you're watching on the webcam. But, you know, it's nice. Unless she's not single, in which case I haven't noticed whether she's good looking or not. I don't know. She's just an entity that happens probably to be female. I didn't even notice. I just assume she is because she's called Angela. I didn't look. That was convincing. She's coming in later to talk about wine, because that's what she does. So all that coming up, and that's just the first hour. If we can wedge it all in, it might run on to my official show, which is from 9 through till 10. Would you like to get involved? Well, you can. 416-872-1010 on the phone. I won't tell you what to call about. It's entirely up to you. If you feel the urge, then you can, you know. Perhaps you have some questions for our residents on the phone today. Well, actually, they're in the studio, but I assume you're not going to come in. That would be an enormous effort. But if you would like to get involved, 416-872-1010. Maybe you're a geek that wants to know something about toys. Maybe you're an anti-geek, if there is such a thing, and would like to ask a geek some questions about geekdom, if that is such a thing. You can see I'm not very practiced in this whole thing. So you can phone the show whenever you feel the need or urge. And, of course, if you have questions about wine and or a love of a cheap wine, I'm always on the hunt because I'm broke. And I like wine. And increasingly here in Ontario, which, by the way, can we talk to her about protectionism? It's very hard to get a wine that's not Ontarian in Ontario. If you're listening outside Ontario, protectionism is alive and well. And it's called the Wine Rack. Otherwise, the LCBO, which does stock wines from around the world, four of them. No, it's got a few, but I want to talk about that because it seems somewhat archaic to me. As a groovy European, or a European at least. So we're going to talk about all things wine. Get involved, 416-872-1010. That's a pretty good synopsis of what's coming up on the show. Of course, you can text the show as well on 71010. And I'd like you to be nice. But, you know, it's a free world and I can take it. I just think you're probably mildly drunk. You're well fed and you're lying there with your hand on your belly. I hope it's your belly. And in which case, good on you. And I should start the show without... I should have started with this, saying a warm and prosperous and sincere and deep happy Thanksgiving to you. And I genuinely mean that. This country has been remarkably friendly towards me in the 8 years I've wandered around it, and very open and welcoming. And I do give thanks very much to you as people for being very warm-hearted and caring and considerate and nice. And sometimes arguably too polite, but, you know, polite's nice. It's important to be nice. Over the last, coming up for a decade, it's been a joy to be here. And, you know, I think this, being that it's called Thanksgiving, I assume that my duty here is to thank everyone that's helped my lovely little journey through my Canadian life evolve. All right. Good. Now, I'm going to do an interview in a minute, but I feel probably, being that we're that close to traffic, we might as well do that first, and then we'll get a bloke on the phone that's going to be telling us all about an upcoming event, Eat to the Beat. First up, though, what is it? 12:15 already. It was a long pre-ramble, wasn't it? Goodness me, you're patient. This is the Paige Chen Show with me, Vinnie White. Straight back into it. Right then, coming up, not on the show, but in our lives, not far away from the 19th annual Eat to the Beat. It's a week from this Tuesday, and I thought it would be a good opportunity to get on Jeff Beach. He's the Executive Director of Willow Breast and Hereditary Cancer Support, a fine organisation offering support to people with breast cancer. And I would imagine from that title, Willow Breast and Hereditary Cancer Support, not just breast cancer then, Jeff.
That's correct. Yes, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me on tonight, Vinny. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, pleasure.
And yes, Willow was founded as an organization by women who had an experience with breast cancer themselves, looking as a way to offer support and a connection, a shared connection to others that are currently going through treatment and survivorship with breast cancer. Of course, now with the really exploding field of genetics and all the various genetic links that there are to breast cancer and other types of cancer, we've expanded our services to provide support and information not only to those that have had a diagnosis, but for those that are high risk as well.
Having known people with various forms of cancers, I'm sure you have, and sadly, I'm sure most of our audience have as well, although I wish it wasn't the case. I've heard repeatedly that one of the most difficult things to deal with when you're told that you have cancer is an enormous feeling of isolation. A lot of people feel, although the statistics are there to prove that you're certainly not alone, very isolated, very lost, very confused. Does your organisation help with that feeling?
Absolutely, we do. And that's one of the things that we hear from callers and people that come out to our support group initiatives as well, is that they do feel isolated. And even though all of us have family and friends that unfortunately have been diagnosed with cancer, there is still that feeling of isolation. Mm. And what the services that we provide allow people a connection and a way to access information that's uniquely provided by someone who truly gets it because they've walked that walk before.
So that's just the sort of support you need, isn't it? Because a lot of people can say, oh, it'll probably be right. Oh, I'm praying for you. Oh, we know you're a great fighter. But what you actually really want is to say, well, actually, I've been there and I can tell you exactly what you're ready for. And by the way, it's not going to be easy, right?
Exactly, yes. And, yeah. And we make sure that, you know, what we do is provide service, we provide hope, but it's not sort of candy-coated type advice. We're providing real information, and the callers we're finding are more and more sophisticated. Patients are very educated, and they call us with very, very sophisticated and complex questions. So we actually have a health librarian as part of our staff team that helps the staff and volunteers that are on the phone and helping people online, so that we're able to provide the credible, real information that they're seeking as part of their journey.
I see. So I'm talking to Jeff Beach. He's the Executive Director of Willow Breast and Hereditary Cancer Support. Before we talk about the event that's coming up, Jeff, just tell me a little bit about how you're funded at the moment.
As an organization, Willow is a nonprofit charity, so we raise funds through a variety. We'll talk a minute about our big event, which is Eat to the Beat, but we also have a wonderful and amazing array of donors that support our organization across the country that include individuals as well as many different corporate sponsors. Avon is actually one of our major funders for the organization, and Scotiabank and some of the pharmaceutical companies that work in the area of breast cancer as well. And we do get a little bit of government funding as well. It works out to be about 10% of our operating budget that's covered through Ministry of Health funding. But the rest is all money that we raise as a charitable organization.
Mm. As my grandfather used to say, 10% better than a slap around the face with a wet fish.
Well, I
think he was bonkers. I should mention he was quite a weird man. He used to set the doorbell off when he sneezed. Didn't know. I never knew how he did it. But yeah, that was one of my only memories of him and his
quite a talent.
Yeah, he was. So, Eat to the Beat is coming up now. If I didn't know much more about this event, and thankfully I do, I would suggest that involves music and some pretty good food. Is that correct?
You're absolutely correct. Those are really the basis for the event. But Eat to the Beat, actually, Willow is celebrating 20 years of service in Canada, and Eat to the Beat has been around for 19 of those 20 years. So it's become a staple of foodie events in the city of Toronto, but it's also a staple for us in terms of the money that it raises. We have raised over those 19 years over $3.5 million for Willow's support services, and we project this year to raise over $200,000 at this year's event alone.
Well, just from this one event?
Absolutely, yes.
Right. Well, in that case, we better find out a bit more about it. So for a kickoff, I can tell you that it's a week from this Tuesday, so that's October the 21st. It's at 7 o'clock at Roy Thompson Hall. So if I'm charitable and reasonable enough to go and buy a ticket for this, and I think I am, what would I see when I turned up on Tuesday, October the 21st?
Well, the event is unique because it features the talents of 60 amazing female chefs. So the chefs are all women. And they
so far, so good.
Yes, and they come from a variety of the finest restaurants and catering companies in the GTA. And each brings, they actually donate obviously their time, but also their food, and they each bring something a little bit different for the event. So there really is something different and available for every palate, savory, sweet, decadent to health conscious, vegetarian options, and basically everything in between. And we not only have these amazing female chefs preparing their signature dishes, but we also have a variety of different beverage providers as well. So we have wineries, breweries, we have spirits, and that's all included in the one ticket price.
Okay, that makes sense. So you turn up, you've got yourself 60 of Canada's top female chefs who are very kindly, as you say, donating their time and their talent to create mouth-watering delicacies, one would hope. Any big names, anyone I'd know in the chef world?
Well, Rose Reisman is this year's celebrity chef. And, of course, Rose is a cookbook author and has been a chef for a number of years and is just absolutely fabulous. And she's also very well known for supporting breast cancer-related causes. She's worked with a number of breast cancer causes and is really proud to be the celebrity chef for this year's event. We also have Ace Bakery, Dufflet, who's a huge name in pastries, Zola Mexican, the Park Hyatt, the Drake Hotel. There's quite a variety of chefs and the establishments that they represent.
Well, I'm sold and I'm free, so I'll pop myself down. How do I get tickets?
Tickets can be ordered directly through our event website. So the for those that are interested in Willow and the support and information that we provide, our website is Willow, just like the tree, willow.org. And the event has its own website, which is eattothebeat.ca, all one word, eattothebeat.ca. And you can buy tickets right there online. Or you can also call us in the office if you are not computer savvy, which most people are buying tickets online, but we can also do orders over the phone. That number is 416-778-6314.
One more time.
416-778-6314. 6314.
Okay, Jeff Beach, he's the man at the moment. He's executive director and a fine chap, if I may. Willow Breston, Hereditary Cancer Support Executive Director. Jeff Beach, thanks for joining us on the phone today.
Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving to you.
Oh, and you too, my friend. Have you had any good food today?
I'm at my mother-in-law's right now, and we just had a beautiful turkey dinner.
Did she look after you?
She always does.
Yeah.
We don't leave hungry.
Which one's better, your mum or your mother-in-law?
Oh, I would never say.
There's a wise man, if ever it needed proving. Take care, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
See you later. I think we can all assume that it's the mother-in-law, because that's where he spent Thanksgiving. But I don't want to cause waves. It's the 19th annual Eat to the Beat, a week from this Tuesday. That's October the 21st. It's at 7 o'clock at the Roy Thompson Hall. If you're not sure where that is, it's 60 Simcoe Street here in Toronto, of course. 60 of Canada's top female chefs are donating their time and talent to create mouth-watering delicacies, as you heard there, everything from decadent to health-conscious and sweet to savoury. And that's all, of course, benefiting the Willow Breast and Hereditary Cancer Support, of which you just heard the executive director. We like him. Toys! Adult toys. Kinky. By the way, I just want to let you know that I have transitioned onto a new topic. I am now no longer talking about Jeff's private life, in case there was any confusion. All right? Good. Toys. Adult toys. Kinky. Not always, you filthy animal, because actually you can have toys to play with as an adult and enjoy yourself in a way that doesn't involve all that dirty business. And I wanted to talk to someone today who knows a lot more about it than I do. He's the owner and self-described geek of Temple of Toys. And my producer's run out and not turned his microphone on. Talking to that, I don't think it's going to work. Okay, hang on. I'm just going to turn it on because he's gone. Hang on a sec. Talk amongst yourselves for a while. There we go. Okay. There we go. Right up like that. Hello, Shane, and what a beautifully live and professional radio show you have found yourself involved in.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. So Shane, as I said there, is, of course, a geek. I think that's fair to say, isn't it? You're a geek?
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. Now, you said this to me on the phone, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable word. Now, I think it used to be that a geek was kind of this kid that would have pimples, sit at the back of the classroom and feel somewhat ridiculed, sadly, by the other kids who were cool, groovy kids. But now it seems that cool and groovy has been redefined. I'm sure there are cool, groovy kids that aren't geeks, but geeks can be cool too. Am I just completely lost touch with schooling and the horrific bullying that goes on, or am I confident to say that we've all become a little bit more understanding?
I'd say it's definitely become more understanding. I mean, the term geek nowadays more or less applies to anyone who has a particular interest or heavy interest, I would say, in any subject matter. So not just pertaining to things like comics or technology, but even, you know, sports.
Yeah. So you could be a sports geek.
Yeah. Well, if you collect hockey jerseys and autographs and things like that, I don't really see a difference between that and comic books, to be honest.
You don't know me very well, but do I appear geeky a little? I'm not offended if I do.
I couldn't say for sure. If you have a particular interest in something, I'd say that. I don't know necessarily that it's a look. It's more about interests.
Sometimes I mix records together in an attempt to be a cool DJ. Is that good?
Yeah, that's a hobby that you're passionate about. So that would be, you'd be a music geek or a music production geek, if you want to call it that.
Okay,
but that's fine.
That's good. We're going to ask you about the Temple of Toys. Now, the Temple of Toys is you're one of the part owners of it. Geeks around Toronto will know it. For someone that's not found themselves at the Temple of Toys, where is it and what's in it?
It's at 587 College Street, so right at College in Clinton in Little Italy. So we specialize in retro toys from the 70s, 80s to the present, and we also have some modern stuff as well. And you'll find a lot of things there. We actually share our space as well with the Comic Book Lounge and Gallery, which was formerly the Dragon Lady comic book store that did retire a couple of years ago, but they've taken over for them since 2 years ago.
It's a bit of a one-stop shop for your geeks.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we also have the backspace, event space in the back that we do a number of things there. and a lot's coming up there that we'll talk a bit about in, in a few minutes or so.
Oh, he's running the shop. I like him already. I've got no idea what's going on, so if you could guide me in, that would be great. And after this, I'm going to do some wine testing, so then I'll be hammered. So if you wouldn't mind hanging around, that would be very helpful. Well, I suppose the first question to ask is, who are your customers? Because in the, I think a lot of us that play with toys on a regular basis aren't adults. But it would appear that that's certainly not the case here. Are most of your customers above 18?
Oh, yeah. I'd say the vast majority of them are. Like,
who are they? If we could paint a picture of these people.
Well, they're pretty much me. I mean, if I wasn't running the store, I would be looking for a place just like it. And we, what we have in common are how I relate to the customers. And by the way, the other owner is my wife, Sari, as well at the store. So I relate to them basically because it's all the stuff that we collected when we grew up and we played with. And in most cases, it either got thrown away by our parents or just we outgrew it and couldn't find it. So a lot of it has to do with reclaiming those toys, reclaiming those memories. And a lot of us feel as though like that was the good old days, Saturday morning cartoons and the toys that stemmed from that.
This is the Vinny White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
It's not though, is it? That's why I wanted to do it. This is the Pay Chen Show with Vinny White, because Pay Chen's a slacker. Yeah? Commitment. Oh, also, I haven't got any family here or anyone to cook me dinner, but commitment, that's what I show. All right, geeks from all around have gathered by the radios and their devices to hear the words of someone who's probably quite high up in the geek hierarchy, I should imagine. He owns the Temple of Toys, a toy store, arguably at least, next to a comic store. He runs some of the events at backspaceto.ca, which do sort of geeky events. We'll find out more about them. His name is Shane. Hello, Shane.
Hello.
Hello. So, Shane, tell me a little bit more about some of the toys you've got. I think probably the easiest way is to look at some. You've brought some in. What's this top one here?
This is actually a Big Boss figure from the Cops line.
Okay. I didn't grow up in this country, so I didn't know who this was, but our producer said he's quite popular. Cops and Crooks. He's a cap-firing cane. Includes a roll of caps. Now, it seems very cheap. This character is $3.
I think towards the end of the run of the show, like, and it was an animated cartoon and an action figure line. So what probably happened was that particular figure, which was one of the more common ones in the line at the time, did get discounted at one point. But of course, now that it's been out of production and a lot of the retro cartoons are coming back into popularity, it's obviously worth considerably more than that right now.
Is it wrong for adults to play with toys?
No. It's not wrong for adults to play with toys at all. I mean, there are actually companies out there such as Sideshow who make toys specifically geared towards adults, and they are priced at retail in the $200 to $350 range.
Do they take them out of their boxes? Because a lot of people say that if you keep them in their boxes, it gets more money, isn't it? More value.
It's kind of a split camp on that one. I mean, a lot of people do keep them in package for the value, but many of the collectors that I know like to open things up and display them in a particular way. And as a collector myself, I've discovered that packaging takes up a lot of space. So, I mean, when I buy something to collect, I'm not buying it with the idea that I'm going to be selling it later on. I buy it to display in my cabinets or whatever, and I'll put them in certain configurations and stuff like that.
Do you and your wife play with adult toys? And let's be clear about the toys of which I speak. I'm talking about the dolls.
Do we play with the actual action figures themselves? Not really, but if I actually could track down some of the incredible crash dummy figures, we might play with those because they, you know, you could smash the cars into walls and they break into pieces and stuff. It's kind of morbid when you think about it, but they were fun toys to play with.
I wonder if that was the inspiration for the band, Crash Test Dummies. The other one that you've given me here is the Goonies. Now, I remember the Goonies, but I'm not sure I'm completely convinced by this. This is a $15. I'll put it in my radio sales voice. Would you like to buy Chunk from the Goonies? $15 gives you a 3¾-inch fully posable action figure. Action figure Chunk comes with movable arms, movable legs, and a movable rotating head. One thing they missed, though, he's not fat. Chunk was fat. That's why he was called Chunk.
Yeah.
The politically correct brigade have got to Chunk, and they've slimmed him down in a hope to avert diabetes.
Well, I think it's more the production department not wanting to go too far with an extra body type, and it's probably more of a standardized body type to save on costs.
Oh, my God. It's Chinese sweatshops banging out repeated same figures and changing their faces.
Well, the style of figure that you're holding, it's a Funko Reaction figure, and it's actually a line that has come out with a lot of figures from the 80s, like a lot of retro figures. So we have a Goonies figure there, and they've done a lot of other ones.
Oh, there's plenty. On the back it says, why not collect Mikey, Mal, Data, Chunk, and, of course, Sloth. And if you remember Sloth from the Goonies, he was the one that went, hey, you guys. Now, is it wrong? I'm going to ask again. I'm not sure if the answer is going to be different. Is it wrong for men in often their 30s and 40s to sit around with plastic figures that are movable and put them in different positions and mimic their voices from films days gone by?
No, it's not wrong. If no one's getting hurt by it, I mean, why not?
See, I actually genuinely do take that line of thought. I think that there's a lot of far more unsavory habits that you could have than this. And
also depends on what you're having them say and do as well.
Right. Have you ever forced Chunk to have sex with a My Little Pony, for example?
I can't say that I have, no.
No, it's probably not right. It's weird that I thought about it. I think we can all see who's repressing his inner wants. Marty McFly is also available if you're interested. Marty McFly looks very much like Chunk with a different head. I think we've worked out why now. How much is he?
Oh, he's the same price. It's a standardized pricing on those, so they go for anywhere from $10 to $15 at the store. And just again to mention, like, the style of figure is based on the 3 3/4-inch figures that were made popular when Star Wars came out in 1977. So they were pretty much the first licensed toy. Prior to that, they did the Mego style figures, which were, you know, partially cloth with the plastic heads, and they were still fully posable but at a much larger scale. But Star Wars made that popular, so this figure has sort of come back into fashion, this scale, the 3 3/4-inch.
Someone's listening and thinking, actually, I think I've got a 3 3/4-inch Star Wars figure from
77.
Yeah. I think I've got one of those in my attic. I think it's been up there ever since the 70s.
Is it in the package?
It's in the package, yeah. What are they likely to get for that?
Well, it depends on a number of factors. Like, first and foremost, condition is an important factor for determining value. But
pristine.
Also,
it's absolutely pristine.
It's pristine, okay. And it also depends on the back of the package, because with Star Wars, they came out with something called the 12-back, which meant that there were 12 figures pictured on the back. I mean, these weren't actually figures that they showed. It was paintings of the characters in the original release, because they hadn't finished the actual figures yet by the
I'm
time.
I'm starting to regret asking this question, but I will bash on nonetheless. Right, it's pristine, it's in my attic, it's got 12 characters on the back. Ka-ching.
Yes, I'd say that's an accurate
assessment. We're talking $100, $1,000?
I'd say if you have a 12-back, you're looking at several hundred dollars if it's in pristine condition, if it's one of the main characters, possibly over $1,000 or more.
Unbelievable. So maybe it is a good investment in the future, but not the reason to collect, one would suggest, because the fact is you might end up with a load of figures that, I mean, if you're not into it, it's not a very solid investment, I'm sure. Some stocks and shares might be slightly better. Nonetheless, they are. It's a fascinating subculture, and one that, as you rightly say, does absolutely no one any harm. So if one wanted to get together and enjoy these toys and events built around them, tell me, what's coming up at Backspace TO?
Well, not just from the toy standpoint, but we do have things that, you know, appeal to the quote-unquote geek culture. Now, for this Friday, we have coming up on the 17th. It's called Retro Replay Friday, and it's an event where people are invited to come in and play the video game systems made famous in the 80s and 90s, so things like the original Nintendo system, Sega Genesis, Super Nintendo, and even moving into some of the later systems like N64, and that's an all-night event. It starts at 7 p.m., runs until midnight, and it's pretty much like buffet style, all you can play from that time. We have snacks and stuff available as well.
You said stuff. Does that mean booze?
No booze, no. Mm. We are not having alcohol, unfortunately, but
are there any characters, let's say, because it wouldn't be out of the realms of consideration to unscrew one of the heads and use one of these characters as a giant drinking vessel.
It's funny you mention that because I have an old He-Man bubble bath container at the store. So if you were to properly clean that out, I suppose it could be upcycled or whatever into or repurposed rather into that. You know, sort of
hint,
function.
But, hint for alcoholic geeks there everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
If there is such a thing. And then other events coming up after that over the next few weeks?
Other events coming up. On October 25th, we're having the Geek Shriek Boutique, which is a combination with, in combination rather, with the Comic Book Lounge's Halloween Comics Fest event. Mm. So a lot of stuff going on there. And relevant to the cops figure we were talking about, we actually have one of the original voice actors from that show appearing as a special guest. He's going to be offering autograph prints and things like that at the event. And his name is Ron Rubin. He actually did the voice of a character called Dr. Bad Vibes, which is like the mad scientist character.
Can you imitate that voice for us?
Oh, it's kind of... I'm going to try and do it. And he kind of had like... kind of laugh like that.
It was good. I think I'm not sure you gave it the passion that you could have done.
No, it's been a long day, so I apologize. My voice acting isn't with me. Additionally, with the Halloween Comics Fest and the Shriek Boutique, it's a number of vendors setting up within our backspace area to offer handmade arts and different crafts in the geek theme. So you get things like jewelry, things like pillows, framed prints, and even T-shirts and other types of clothing. And for the Halloween Comics Fest, people have an opportunity to pick up some free comics that are actually offered by a lot of the major publishers specifically for that day.
Before I go, with not looking at a financial prospect at all, could you tell me what your favorite toy is in your own personal collection?
My favorite toy in my own collection would have to be the Inspector Gadget doll from 1983.
We had that in the UK. He was really stupid, but Brains and Penny? Brains and Penny?
Penny and Brain, yes.
Penny and Brains. Yeah. They used to organise him.
Yeah, they actually did all the work.
They really did.
He was well paid and well equipped.
It was very much, if you've ever worked in the banking sector, it was very much like how all of the assistants actually do the work, and the bankers themselves are usually really quite foolish and on the golf course. I feel that that's why we all had an affiliation towards it. We aired with Inspector Gadget and his stupidity and loved him for who he was.
Yep, no, he was one of my favorites, but more because the figure came with a lot of fun accessories
there,
like the hands and stuff. Like
more the figure's hands.
It was the little helicopter blades and the handcuffs.
What
and
about the blow up jacket?
It didn't do that.
It's too much work, isn't it?
Legs.
It's too much work.
If I could just mention also, on November 1st, we do have another event, and this is something that's very near and dear to us, which is the, it's called the Comic Book Marathon, the Toronto Comic Marathon Special Edition in support of Epilepsy Toronto. And people of all ages and skill levels are invited to come in, draw a comic page per hour in support. It's a pay-what-you-can donation, and we're also going to be having some comic industry pros coming in that day and providing sketches and things, all in support of the charity for auction as well.
Perfect. Owner and self-described geek, Temple of Toys, we have there, Shane. Thanks for coming in, Shane. Really appreciate it. And if you want more information on the events of which he spoke, then I believe the website is backspaceto.ca.
Correct.
Thank you, my friend. Coming up, we drink wine. You never know where it's going to go. Or at least we talk about it. We'll find out if I can have a cheeky little nip as well. Was that a pompous impression of an English accent once again on our adverts? It's so difficult to be English in this country. I don't know why they don't hire me to do it. If you're advertising products and you want to sell something in a patronising, condescending and somewhat 1970s-esque way of imitating a British accent, why not use me? I'll do it. It won't sound ridiculous like some pompous tit in a bowler hat that doesn't exist. I'll do it. This is it. All right? Now, here come the adverts. This is the Pei Chen Show with Vinnie White. She's away, I think it's only this week. She'll be back in her usual place. She's very lovely. But I get to exploit the essence of her show by doing some of the things that she would do. For example, talking about food and booze. We took a quick diversion there to talk about all things geek, but Let's get back to the important stuff. And there's noise that I like very much. Coming from the other side of the studio. Who have we got here? Her name's Angela. And her last name is Aiello. I presume that's the enunciation.
Yes, it is, sir.
Oi, turn a mic on. Not that one. Honestly, I'm going to fire it.
Yes, it is, sir.
There we go. That's better.
Thank you.
Turn that one off and that one on. Why is that one on? What's he doing? He plays microphone roulette in there. Do you know
they
that?
Have changed
he
all
just
these
turns them all on.
Here.
Oh, it's because that one broke last week, isn't it? They've changed them all over. Elliot's off the hook. He's all right. I thought he'd be tucking into our guest's vino already. Right, let's get this professionalism back on track. Angela is a wonderful woman and, dare I say, someone that looks rather young for someone that works in booze. Perhaps wine is an antioxidant after all.
Perhaps.
Tell me a little bit about you and what you do.
Well, I'm a professional drinker.
Rock and roll.
My job's up for grabs. I know. It's a nice
one.
And
the phones have gone mental already. Yeah. All six lines. You are, in many respects, actually a professional drinker, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know, I drink so much that every now and then I have to go on detox. But, you know, most of the time I'm drinking wine. And I'm talking about it in a lot of different ways. On TV, on radio, I write.
I've seen some of your stuff on TV. And and I do mean this genuinely. I'm not just doing this to chat you up. You do actually look younger in real life than you do on screen.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if there is some truth in the fact that a couple of cheeky glasses a day aren't too bad for someone. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's true, for sure.
Doctors first came out, I think it was a few years ago, and said that it was actually clinically proven that just under a standard glass of red wine was shown to be actually helpful in long aging, and I'm sure, I would imagine, happiness as well.
Absolutely, especially when you live in the city. Everybody needs a stress reliever.
Damn right. personally, you might think this is water. Let me tell you, it's our old buddy tequila. You've got 15 plus years of experience, despite your youthful looks, in the world of food and wine. Angela is, as she says, a writer, an educator, a host, an entrepreneur, and the founder of the Aiello Wine Club. Mm. So your last name's Aiello. Mm-hmm. You decided to come up with Aiello Wine Club. I'm sure Apple will sue you, sure enough.
Cheeky. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You write an international wine column for a fashion magazine and a monthly column and loads of other stuff. Mm. First of all, let's start with the basics. Yeah, we all like wine, but we don't choose to make a life from it. What was it that made you think, hang on a minute, I could actually do this?
Well, honestly, I moved to Toronto. I have a degree in communications, and I started working in real-life jobs. And, you know, didn't really love it.
Yeah, I had a stab at that. Terribly dull, isn't it?
Yeah, and I had to come from wine country. So when I moved to the city, I had all this wine. I basically made friends by giving everybody booze with me, drinking wine with me.
And so, that's exactly how it works. And I believe it's just about to happen any second now.
Exactly, and here
and
we
I.
go.
I must concur. Yeah, I find normal jobs, and believe me, I've done them for long enough, are a bit annoying because they sort of expect you to come in every day.
Yeah, in the morning.
In the morning, and then you have to sit there and do stuff for someone else. What a ridiculous concept.
Yeah, not my thing, no.
So you decided to go out, break away. Was it Aiello that started your success?
Yeah, well, actually, I was working in TV, and then I started to blog and then throw parties, and the blog I called Aiello Wine Club, and it's really just a social club where people get together and taste wine, learn about wine, and meet other people.
Now, I haven't yet been to any of your events, but one of the things that I liked about it, because a friend of mine, Maria, introduced me to you, mm-hmm. and she had been to your event,
mm-hmm.
she said, and she's a newfie, so she doesn't even know what pretentious is, she's just wonderful in every respect, and she said that one of the most beautiful things about yours was that she'd been to many wine events and they're always full of stuffy toffee nose people telling each other about their Audis, but she came to yours and found out it was just a bunch of really good people, maybe getting a little bit wobbly occasionally, but enjoying good wine without all the pretentiousness.
Exactly.
How do you do that? How do you get rid of that?
Yeah, I mean, when I came to the city, I really wanted a club to hang out with and drink friends with, and rather than just going to a wine bar, which is most of the time in Toronto pretentious anyways. I know, you know, King West pretentiousness, you kind of get that.
Yeah.
So I found that it was just really old. So I said, you know what, I'm going to do this myself. So really, I just trailblazed a way for young people who love wine to get together. And now we all drink wine in a wine cave around the corner.
Tell me about this wine cave.
Yeah, it's just around the corner at Osgood Station, and it's in a back alleyway. It's got graffiti on the doors. I mean, I really my vision of what wine is very underground. It's very easy. It's fun. It's none of what snobs think wine is.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So you're redefining the world of it.
That's taking some work, you know.
Well, it will. Because
and some drinking.
Well, you'll be pleased to hear that I've got your back, baby cakes.
Yes, amazing.
Together we'll take it on. I think we can fairly gladly describe me as unpretentious.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what wine is, though. You know, like, there's parts about wine. There's the snobbery part about wine, but then there's wine,
yeah,
which is all of wine, the easy part.
And I think
part.
A lot of people blur those lines. The fact is that there is a snobby end. I mean, there are, after all, bottles in circulation in some of the millionaires' mansions for up to $250,000.
Yeah.
You know, this is stupid wine that is actually insured to never be opened.
Right.
And when you get to that level, yeah, sure, it's like any sort of art currency. Mm. The beauty is somewhat questionable to the value. Mm. But it slurs the name of people that just want a nice drop, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, there is that sort of high-end elitism about it, but actually, normal bods like you and me can get involved with a bit of the old vino.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking
so,
of which.
Let's get...
When do we start drinking? Yeah.
Shut up, Vinny, for God's sake. This stuff smells good.
Chardonnay is intoxicating me.
Right, let's throw it to you. What am I drinking there?
Oh, here you go.
Yeah. What is it and how much is it?
Well, it's not expensive, but I'm giving you a glass with no stem. Do you know what kind of glass that is?
Well, I'm always a bit confused about this because I thought with a white wine such as this, you're supposed to have a stemmed glass so as not to put your body warmth through the glass. Is that correct?
Yes, but this is sort of a new age glass for us unpretentious wine drinkers, and it's called the O glass.
Oh, I see. Also, having no stem, it's also fantastic for alcoholics and people that drop things a lot.
Yeah.
Or knock things off.
I mean, it's the thing with wine glasses, they always break. No matter what kind you have, you've always got to replace them.
Yeah.
But in your glass, we have a Chardonnay. And I want to talk about Chardonnay because it's the world's most versatile grape. It's also the world's most planted grape. It's also the grape you can buy lots of in the LCBO, and you never really know what you're going to get, which is so challenging, which is why people have such a hard time finding great Chardonnay for their palate.
I'll tell you what's slightly more challenging than that, being told by your producer that you've got to cut to the news in 30 seconds when you've just been given a beautiful woman and a glass of wine. God's sake, what's wrong with this place? Who wants news? It's Thanksgiving. I can do a quick wrap-up. Middle East, still looking questionable. Lots of people, few too many drones for my liking. John Tory looking good. Ford said something silly again. Done. Right, can we drink now? We've got to do the news? Right. When we come back in my actual show, I will drink booze for your benefit. Yes, it's Thanksgiving. That was the Pei Chen Show. Confusingly, my show is next and very soon for that matter. Thanks for listening to this one. Do hang around for the next one. I don't make the rules. If I did, they'd be this stupid, but I don't make the rules. Coming up, booze! News Talk 1010.
This is the Vinny White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Yes, good evening and happy Thanksgiving. Now, if you've just joined us, where have you been? I've been on for the last hour, but you know what? I'll let you off because you're probably mildly drunk, feeling rather full and discombobulated with so much partying to be done. Or you may hate your family and be on the run from them, and which is very often the case, but, you know, don't always admit it to them, I find. Probably best keep it underground. You hear the beautiful chirp of a fine young lady. Her name is Angela. She was on the last show and has bridged over to this show. Angela is, she's not too shabby to look at, but more importantly, she's a person with her own abilities. Stop being such a pervert. Angela Aiello is the president of the Aiello Wine Group and has previously discussed, has taken some of the pretension and pomp and circumstance and ceremony and idiocy of wine and got rid of it and just ensured that people enjoy and learn about good wines in a cool setting. And that setting's not far from here. Tell me more about this wine cave.
Yes, it's so when you become a member of the club, you get invited to all of our wine school classes and all of our winemakers that come into town. We get special notices on when they're coming in. Mm. And you can come in and basically meet people in our wine cave. It's like an underground setting. It's very Prohibition style. It's very Melbourne. It's very UK. I've sort of designed it to be everything you think about wine, not.
Good, yeah. So Prohibition style, dark, moody.
Exactly.
Not necessarily that easy to find.
Exactly.
Okay.
You got it.
So how does one become involved in this? Because it's not essentially a bar. You can't just walk in without an invite, can you?
Yes. No, it's members only. So you can go online and register. It's really quite easy. You go to iyellowwineclub.com, become a member right on the upper right-hand side, and you get invites to everything we have coming up.
Now, as a European, I find sometimes, and I'm trying desperately not to sound pompous myself right now, but I find some the wine laws here in Ontario in particular somewhat outdated and overtly strict. And let's be completely frank about this, bloody stupid.
Yes, everybody has complaints about Ontario.
If I want to go and sit in a park and drink a bottle of wine with my wife, not that I've got one, but let's embellish this hypothetical scenario. And a policeman comes along. He has the right to arrest me and ticket me, should he want to. So that's already one area that I would question. I mean, I understand if you're making abusive noises and doing all the other things that could be associated with drunken behaviour. But if you're just having a cheeky glass of wine, I think it should be perfectly reasonable. And
agreed.
And likewise, I thought you might agree. And likewise, it'd be very weird if you didn't.
You should get arrested for that.
And likewise, I would say sometimes it's quite repressive with protectionism. For example, you'll be more aware than anyone that if you go to the wine rack here in Ontario, it has to be Ontario wines. Or you can get, I think, is it 30%? Australian 30%, New Zealand, and then they mix it with Ontario grapes.
The Canadian blends or something like that.
It's blatant protectionism. It feels like the 20s again, but that's what's happening. Whereas if you go to the LCBO, albeit a bastardised monopoly that gives the government money, you will, of course, actually be able to buy a further selection of wine. And once you get in those doors and you get amongst it, presumably you can get anything you like.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying earlier to Elliot that, you know, the LCBO, even though it seems ancient and outdated, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I've traveled all over the world. And here in Ontario, we get the most amount of global selection of wine than anywhere. So we should feel relatively lucky in the fact that we can be adventurous wine drinkers, because you go to other places in the world and you can only drink wine from that region.
Well, okay. That's
I mean, you've been to the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, you are from the UK, so I mean, you totally understand. You guys get a lot of selection over there, too.
We do. We're very lucky. And perhaps I'm slightly biased because I'm used to growing up in that environment.
Exactly.
But it's nice to hear that. Mind you, having said that, yes, you get the biggest selection, arguably, in the world. They're also, the LCBO are the biggest wine purchasers in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes.
So, you know, it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. Now, you have operated this wine cave. Love that term.
Mm-hmm.
Loving that already. It's great, isn't it? Where are you off to? Wine cave.
The wine cave.
Oh, it's a little bit dodgy, which I like. If you go to the wine cave, what's likely to happen? And do you have to only get involved in the events, or can you just?
Well, what happens in the wine cave stays in the wine cave. So, no, really, most of the time we're drinking wine and eating cheese. Actually, those are the first two things. And then the wine school classes I teach a lot, so you're coming to learn. Really, you're just coming to learn and taste wines because. You'll never, I was saying to Elliot earlier as well, like the thing about wine is no matter how much you learn, there's always more to learn.
Yeah.
There's just this endless black hole of wine education.
Maybe you can start, as opposed to the wine cave, but we could start right here, right now in this here studio. You've brought a wine for me.
Yeah.
I've been very disciplined and not drunk any yet, so I've been waiting for this moment. Tell me about this. What am I drinking?
Yeah, okay, so I've got, you were talking about local. You said something earlier about local, and I grew up in the local wine business, started in it at about 98, 99, and have seen it grow from, you know, the younger, you know, basically the young, a very young industry to an industry coming into its maturity. And Chardonnay is one of the grapes we do here in Ontario very well. As I said earlier too, Chardonnay is the world's most planted grape. So everywhere in the world plants Chardonnay, but it's also a grape variety that no matter when you walk into the LCBO and you look for Chardonnay, it's everywhere. So how do you know what you like? Because it's a very versatile grape. Here we have something that's done with a little bit of barrel age and barrel fermentation, which is how I personally love my Chardonnays. But Chardonnays can come completely unoaked, so really light, crisp, really, really refreshing, to really full-bodied and full of dark and deeper textures.
Right,
everything in between.
Very versatile. Yeah.
So you kind of have to like find your type of Chardonnay. So this one in your glass is from Château des Charmes, which is one of my favorite wineries in Niagara-on-the-Lake, and it's a chateau. It's run by the Bosque family. Oh.
I've just had a swig.
And first three words that come from drinking that wine.
Mellow, fruity. Is it wrong to say sexy?
No, absolutely not. A slow clap. for choosing sexy. That's fantastic. No, that's what comes from wine is meant to be something like a personality.
Ah, yeah. Well, in that case, it was lovely. Yeah. And if it was a physical form, it would be a buxom blonde.
Oh, I love it. See, there you go. That's exactly how I would pinpoint this Chardonnay. It's got a little bit of barrel age and some barrel fermentation, so it has some texture, some voluptuousness,
nice,
some nice volume on your palate, so you can feel it everywhere, which is one of the things I love about the Chardonnay.
Is there any truth in, I remember doing some sort of basic wine course back in the UK, I was a little bit hammered, so I'm not sure what happened, but someone said that if the wine sticks to the glass, it means something.
Yes. Do you remember what those things are called when you swirl your glass and you see them running down? Do you remember what those are called?
Booze waves.
Yeah, actually, I like that term. They're called legs.
Are they?
Which is, they're called legs. And they're indicative of, they can actually tell you about something in wine. So after you're like swirling the wine and you're looking at the legs running down the side of the glass, the quicker those legs run, the lighter the body, the less alcohol.
Oh.
The fatter they are or the slower they run is indicative of more alcohol and more body in a wine.
Oh, which is why port's a bit thicker and takes that a while to run down, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Port or ice wine, higher alcohol, higher sugar wines are fuller bodied, and then you have got like things like Pinot Grigio and Sauvignon Blanc that are like water. Oh, he takes a second sip.
Is it wrong?
No, well, keep sipping. Mm. You know that your palate it takes actually time for your palate to adjust to a wine. So you actually have to take 2 and 3 and 4 sips of a wine to really judge it as a true wine judge.
Is that the case? Because when you see people that doing, I presume they're doing a lot of tasting, particularly in tasting in the vineyards, they quite often just do their wash around and spit out thing.
Yeah.
Probably as a hope to
not. And drink a lot of beer too. You have to like keep your palate like, ready.
What, to sort of reset it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like ginger when you're eating sushi.
Exactly. You got it. Mm.
Okay,
every winemaker will say it takes a lot of beer to make wine because they're drinking a lot of wine and then in their off time they're drinking beer to sort of reset their palate.
If anything is the best excuse in the world, then that was it. Hi, honey. Sorry, I'm hammered. I had to drink beer between the wine because A, I was working, and B, if you don't drink beer, you don't enjoy the wine.
Exactly.
And that's why I've lost my job. Now the kids are going to have to go to work. But I don't see that as a real problem. They're pretty big. Is a 5-year-old big? It feels big. Okay, so that's a pretty good entry. In fact, I say more than pretty good. I'm not just saying this for the radio. It is actually astonishingly good. How much would this bottle be and where could I find it?
I mean, it's under $20. I think it's $14, $15, $16. I mean, that's a sweet spot for me. I think most people buy wine under $20, right? That's kind of where almost everybody shops. Chardonnay in Ontario can run upwards of $30 and $40 if it's made really on the premium side. If you've been to Prince Edward County, they do a lot of $30, $40 Chardonnay, especially if they're using French oak barrels and da-da-da-da-da-da.
French oak barrels that are
more
brandy.
More expensive. Yeah, more, and French oak is more expensive than American oak, Hungarian oak, Canadian oak, etc. So there's lots of variables to it. But you can find some wonderful Canadian wines under $20, like wonderful. Mm. And we're cool climate here. You know, like you were talking the other day about putting on your hoodie because it's getting cold, you know what I mean?
Don't listen to this radio show, do you?
Maybe.
Oh, goodness me. How embarrassing.
And it's, it's fashion. You're changing your fashion for fall. You have to change your wine styles for fall. And Chardonnay's the grape for fall, for sure.
Yeah, it is. And is it? I don't know if I'm abnormal or if this is just something that I've developed through the years. I always like a red when it gets cold.
Yeah, you got to warm up.
Yeah.
Right? It's about warming your body up. And so red wine becomes much more popular in the winter and fresh, crisp whites in the summer just because naturally that's what you're craving.
How do you feel about a cold red? Sometimes when I'm in Spain, which I had the fortune of going to a lot when I lived in the UK. I don't go there much now. It's not really a weekend event. but if you go to Spain, you have a good Rioja, for example. Quite often, if you buy it from a bar, they'll actually serve it cold. Mm. And for some weird reason, I don't mind. What's that about?
I also personally agree. Red wine chilled is the bomb. Like, it is the way red wine should be, especially in the summer. Mm. But what happens is if you serve red wine too warm, you're basically tasting the alcohol. So you almost always want to serve red wine at cellar temperature or below. And cellar temperature, I sort of put quotes around that because that's cellar temperature, like, way back in the day. So it needs to be cold.
Is cellar temperature room temperature?
It's under room temperature. It's like if you walk to your basement. You know, if you live in the house or you used to live in the house and you walk to the basement, it's obviously probably 5 to 7 degrees cooler than your, regular room temperature. So I usually throw a bottle of red in the fridge for 10 minutes before serving it because the perception of fruit will heighten and your perception of alcohol will decrease. So it actually tastes better.
We're living in a world where, as I said earlier, you can get extortionately, stupendously, undrinkably expensive wines.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions I've always got is, you were talking there, this wine, for example, really nice, under 20 bucks. I think you said 15, 16 bucks. Yeah. If you start chucking on 10 bucks, 20 bucks to that, ending up with, you know, as you say, your PEI sort of $30, $35 wines, how much more of a taste and more quality will you actually notice? I know everyone's palate's different. I appreciate that. But is there a formula, you know, a slightly more expensive, another 10 bucks? You've got to enjoy it another 10%. It's not really like that, is it?
I guess it depends when you're opening it and who you're opening it with. I mean, I think so much of wine is dependent on your environment. So if you know, if you're drinking it with people who are real winos, you might enjoy it more. If you're opening it after two or three bottles of wine, maybe not. I think that there is definitely a threshold of, you know, cheap wine and then good wine. But there's always, it's like anything, there's the good stuff and the bad stuff. I think for Chardonnay particularly, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, to buy those items in the $30 and $40 range, you're getting a great quality. Mm. So you can find wines, both those varietals under $20, but you have to source out really good bottles. It takes some time to kind of sort through.
Is there any way... tight man, such as myself.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, tight wallet, you mean? Like,
yes.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right.
Well, tight buns as well, yeah. I suppose. You want to have a look? Is it wrong? Any opportunity? I didn't actually pull my trousers down, listeners. I just showed him my posterior through my jeans. It was all very classy. I'm obviously hammered. This is fantastic. I love you.
I know your glass is empty.
I love you, listeners.
You like the Chardonnay.
I love you, Angela. I love you, Elliot.
Vinnie White on wine.
I love your bald heads. Can I lick it? Can I lick it? You know, I say this. This is actually how I am when I'm drunk, apparently. Which is why nowadays I don't really get drunk.
Oh, I know.
Well, you have to stop, don't you? When you get to our ripe old age, pardon the pun of ripeness, when you get to our age, hangovers are just evil.
Oh, they're atrocious, which is why you need to drink better wine, because you end up, you know, really making sure that what you drink is good, not just drinking for the sake of drinking. And I think that's what happens as you get older.
Is there such a thing as a good wine that's not going to give me a shocking hangover if drunk responsibly, that's very tasty, much like this, for $11?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, go on then. Right, I'm going to write this down. Are you going to kill me after this?
I know. I'm like trying to think. There are lots of, like, this wine's even $14.50. I'm trying to think of an 11. Oh, yes. Okay. If you like this Chardonnay, there's a Chardonnay that's $11.95 from South Africa.
Okay.
And it's called Fleur de Cap Chardonnay. And it's $11.95. And it is amazing. Like, I can't write home enough about it. It's one of my... And it's from South Africa. So it's a very small producing wine region. People don't really know about it. Hence why the price is so great. Mm. And it's half stainless steel and half barrel. So you're getting really great balance. Cool. Yeah, Fleur de Cap Chardonnay.
I went on a wine tour in Stellenbosch in South Africa. And I honestly cannot remember a thing.
Oh, really? But do you remember things about South Africa? Like, obviously, they say South Africa is the most beautiful place in the world.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Have you not been?
No, I have not been.
Oh, you really must.
I'm going next year. Woo, I can't wait.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to be in essence. I'd live there. I actually thought about it. I thought about moving from Canada there because I prefer the climate there. But I'm not a big fan of getting my car broken into in the middle of the night and punched senseless at traffic lights.
No.
And also, speaking of traffic lights, they are traffic lights. They're not robots. Mm. Did you know that the South Africans call them robots?
No.
What's that about?
I don't know.
Yeah. When I was first lost, I was renting a car there and they said, right, you want to go straight down here, go over the bridge, past the robots. I'm like, right, I don't know how out of control this country is, but if it's being run by robots, I'm not going that way.
That's crazy. I know South Africa has their own language too.
Yes.
They have their own very, like, African language.
Yeah. So. If you speak Dutch, as I obviously do, then you can just about get by with Afrikaans. It's very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a beautiful country and, of course, a beautiful wine region. And if you didn't get that, it's the Fleur de Cap from South Africa. And you can get that from the LCBO for $11.95, which is a pretty damn good price point nowadays for a good wine. Not the dodgy old Merlot for $9.95 that you can get at the wine rack, which I woke up having drank half a bottle and felt as if I'd been punched in the face by a rock.
That's red wine, though. Okay, red wine's high in sugar, which is how, you know, basically why hangovers can happen. Just because too much red wine will give you too much sugar, too much alcohol. So if you find wines that are a bit more balanced in general, particularly white wines, Chardonnays, I mean, not to say that they don't give you a hangover. Enough of anything will give you a hangover, but you know, it's a bit more of a refined way. Refined way to climb.
Yeah, you wake up saying, I don't feel like I've been dragged by a hedge and molested. Yeah. You wake up feeling like you have been stroked a little bit too hard. That sounded terribly wrong. Let's cut that out and definitely not put that in the podcast. tell you what, it's a good job this isn't live. Right, so let's find out a little bit more about iYellow. I want to join. How much is it? How do I join? And what the hell do I get out of it?
It's free. And you get lots of wine. Yeah, it's free to join.
Where do I sign?
It's right on the website.
iYellow Wine, is it?
Yeah, iyellowwineclub.com.
Okay, iYellow Wine Club.
iYellow, like I, then the color, yellowwineclub.com.
I'm sure it's not iyellowwinegroup.com.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Okay.
It's iyellowwineclub.com.
That's what I've got down here. Shows mine. I'm going to fire.
Right.
He's fired as well.
That's okay.
Kick the researcher out. Kick the
producer
out.
If you Google iYellow, we come up.
Okay, you know. Good. So you join for free, and then how do you make your money? Obviously, these events happening in your wine cave.
Yeah.
How does that work? Do you pay to get in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Things?
Then it's like a pay-to-play type of membership. So we've got probably over 30 classes a year. We're running some Scotch classes actually coming up in the fall with Glenlivet, which is going to be really fun in the cave. And we do tours to Prince Edward County, Niagara. We did one to Tuscany this year. So we do group tours where we have a lot of fun and drink. And we do events all over the city in really popular, awesome spots where you can taste like hundreds of wines in a night.
Do you have a guilty pleasure? I remember watching a documentary with Jamie Oliver, the Mockney. All right, mate, sorted. We're going to sort out America. It's going to be all right, him.
Yeah.
And he said that, if he's completely honest, every couple of months, he'll put the lamb chops and the beautiful cutlets to the side and he'll go to McDonald's and he'll have a burger. Do you ever find yourself thinking, I know this wine's crap, but for some reason I like it?
Yeah.
Which
absolutely.
One?
Which one?
Yeah.
I don't think any wine's crap, but there are, like, I find myself drinking, like, cheap wine sometimes with, like, Kraft dinner or Chinese food takeout or, like, really kind of wacky food pairings where you're like, I drink wine with everything I'm having. I had Kraft dinner the other day. I opened up a bottle of sparkling wine and said, yeah, this works. Like,
so anyone that's just texted and said, this sounds pretentious, listen to that. Kraft dinner and a bottle of dodgy bubbly.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect pairing.
A couple of texts in, actually. If you have got any questions, fire them in quickly on 71010. Someone said, is it all right to have wine with curry? Is that all right?
Yes, absolutely. Any type of spicy dish, you want to pair with a wine that's a bit sweeter. So that can be a Gewürztraminer or a Riesling. Both are wonderful pairings with that type of food.
Okay. 71010, should we take rosé seriously? I've never found one that isn't sweet and horrible, says
absolutely.
Someone.
Absolutely. There are a ton of pink wines that are dry. In fact, the trend right now in rosé wines is to go dry. So when you're finding pink wines that are too sweet, what you want to do, pour in another glass of wine.
I was mid-sentence, I pushed an empty glass her way.
I don't like empty glasses.
No,
they're always
vulgar.
Full. Rosé, for sure. Find the dry wines. I mean, the association is that pink wine is sweet, but it's a moving towards a dry. And rosé is from Ontario, rosé is from Provence, rosé is from South America. Amazing, great value, and really dry. Yes. I like these questions. They're good.
Yeah. I've got one more. It's coming in on the text, 71010. I'm not going to ask that. That's rude. That's just someone was very complimentary, but a little bit too complimentary about your voice.
Oh.
Well, I'll tone it down. She sounds, let's say they said attractive, which they didn't. But it was really nice. What they said was really nice.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a bit rude.
Is he drinking too much wine?
I would think so. here's another one. What's a good wine to drink with ceviche or Peruvian food?
Ooh.
Now, I'll throw that question to you. Having eaten a lot of ceviche and been to Peru, I find those two things are very different. Peru's specialist dish is a guinea pig. So I think that, let's do one at a time. What's a good food to drink with ceviche, first of all?
Okay, ceviche's got a lot of acidity to it. So you really want a wine that wants to pair off that acidity, right? Because it's citric, you got that citric acid going on.
Right.
So I would definitely recommend something like a Sauvignon Blanc or even a bubbly.
Okay.
A bubbly wine.
And
yeah.
If you
Sauvignon
can help
Blanc's
us with this,
probably perfect, though.
I feel like this might be a little bit too niche, but what's a good wine to go with Peruvian food?
Yeah, explain to me, give me a Peruvian dish specifically.
What did I eat a lot of in
Peru?
Or
give me, the flavor profiles around it.
I actually ate a llama once in Peru. Not a
lamb?
Whole no, a llama.
A llama. Oh.
Yeah.
Would you say the meat is more medium? Like, it's not full-blown beef, but it's more medium kind of bodied? You know what I mean? In flavor.
Well, I don't think that a lot of people are listening to this worried about what to pair with a llama. So I think we'll just skip the question. Let's ask a slightly more...
So anything. Yeah. Just drink wine with Peruvian food. It'll work.
I think that might be the weirdest question I've ever asked anyone. Hmm. What goes with a llama? Coming up on News Talk 1010, have you always wondered what goes with a llama? Well, let me tell you. We don't know. Oh, here we go. The text back in. Oh,
okay.
I meant mostly fish. We should have said fish then.
Okay.
Right. There. What goes with fish?
Fish. Another great... I love sort of going against the rules, the wine and food rules, and pitching a red wine with fish. So Pinot Noir, a nice light-bodied Pinot Noir, is perfect with fish, and also a Gamay Noir, which is made a lot here in Ontario. And the equivalent to that over in France would be Beaujolais.
I see.
So both those wines are really fantastic as a red wine. For fish, if you've got a creamy sauce to it, I would recommend something along the lines of a Chardonnay that has had a little bit of barrel time to have that body that goes with the creaminess. Otherwise, you know, Riesling is a wonderful, bankable. If I had to pick one white wine that goes with everything almost all the time, it would be Riesling.
It's your go-to, is it?
It's my go-to.
It's safe go-to.
I send cases of Riesling to everybody. It's my number one. It's my, like, backpack if I had it. If Riesling's just the wine I recommend all the time.
I'm going to leave it on that. Again, I'm being slightly selfish. It's just for my own personal need. Can you recommend a Riesling that isn't sweet? Because I find that you can get a very sweet Riesling.
Well, Riesling can vary. There is a dry Riesling from Vineland Estates Winery in the LCBO and a semi-dry. Mm. So, I mean, Riesling in general does have a little bit more sweetness levels than, say, a Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm.
And that's characteristic of the grape, but it's also part of what makes Riesling wonderful, is that sweetness, which is what you really want. I would recommend a dry Riesling. Almost all the wines from Ontario that are Riesling are really dry. So go to the Ontario section, pick up a Riesling, and I tell you, you're going to love it.
Okay.
Writing it down. Wine notes.
My handwriting seems to have got somewhat worse throughout this interview. It looks like a doctor or someone that's taken a great deal of acid now.
Well, you are drinking Chardonnay. It does have a little bit of acidity to it. I don't know.
Somebody said rather arguably, perhaps you should spend more than 5 minutes at Wine Rack looking for cheap wines and appreciate their great selection of wines.
I agree with that.
Well, yeah. But they're still not a global selection.
No.
I do agree that there are some, and foolishly, perhaps, I've always stuck to the very cheap end and found myself in a position I didn't want to find myself. So, yeah, but my argument is if we must insist on being pandered to as school children by having these great bodies that are government-owned dictating what wines and where we can drink them, then it would be nice, in my opinion, to have a slightly bigger selection everywhere, you know.
Well, Wine Rack is actually owned by wineries. So the Wine Rack and the Aisle 43 stores that are in lots of grocery stores are owned by wineries in Niagara. So you only get a selection from those wineries because they have like really long contracts that go back that allows them to do that, whereas most wineries do not. Okay. So you're really the only way to get international wine is to go to the LCBO. Wine Racks, Aisle 43s, Vineyard Estate wine stores, all are Ontario only.
You have been a charm, a pleasure, and you gave me free booze. So you're quite nice, really. If you want to find out more, the iYellow Wine Club, iYellow, because Angela's last name is iYellow. So if you want to get involved, just Google it away. What's the website to go to one more time?
iYellowWineClub.com.
Join up, get yourself to some of the events. If you know where the Much Music building is that we broadcast from, it's really down the road, which is rather beneficial for me, if I may be so bold. Angela, you've been wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
We come back and talk about peace prizes and Nobel Prizes that were given out. Some of that was just absolutely beautiful news there. Coming your way, News Talk 1010. This is the Vinnie White Show on News Talk 1010. Newstalk1010.com is our website. If you want the podcasts, go to vinniewhite.co.uk. That's vinniewhite.co.uk. Facebook, Vinnie White. Twitter, Vinnie White. Do you need a canvas for Christmas or something? I've got a company. It's called MrPhotoCanvas.com. Mr. Photo Canvas blows up your image and puts it on canvas. Nice. And I've also got another company which I'd like to plug, if I may be so bold, before it gets a little bit boring. Last one. Do you need training in Adobe software? Then go to AdobeTrainingToronto.com. I'll teach you stuff and things. AdobeTrainingToronto.com. That's that out the way. Blatant. Let's give a quick update on Rob Ford. Don't often talk about him. I've sort of ramped it down, but Ford is spending Thanksgiving weekend in hospital undergoing his second round of chemotherapy. Ford's brother Doug told reporters yesterday the mayor was doing all right in his cancer fight. Doug went on to say, I love him because he's trying his best from his hospital bed, making calls and helping out. That's what Doug Ford said yesterday. The chemo is really knocking the socks off him this time. My heart goes out, and I genuinely do mean that, to anyone that's in the position that Rob Ford is, and indeed Rob Ford himself. The mayor is expected to be out of hospital in a few days. Don't be shocked. He's losing the majority of his hair, said Doug. He's collecting it for the doctors to kind of see how the process is going. Of course, last month, Rob Ford dropped out of the mayor's race after he was diagnosed with a pleomorphic liposarcoma just days after he went into hospital for an abdominal pain. And he's been there pretty much ever since, really, hasn't he? There was a message that Rob Ford encouraged people to vote for his brother. He said, Doug will be the best mayor this city has ever had. Doug will be the best mayor this city's ever had. That's about sort of a self-put-down in a bizarre way, isn't it, if that is the case? Now, I do have a message for Rob Ford, this comes from a really good place, a really warm place, and I don't want anyone to be confused about that. Rob, stop. Concentrate on you, yeah? When I hear your brother, the mini Oompa Loompa, saying he's trying his best from his hospital bed, making calls and helping out, I think, Rob, stop making calls and helping out. Ironically, I would say it's actually quite selfish to be concentrating on politics when you have a family. Whilst you may be a hero to a dwindling few residents in the burbs, your outlandish use of time and energy from hospital bed is, in my view, silly. So stop it. I love him because he's trying his best from his hospital bed, making calls and helping out. No one expects that from you. It's not going to help you. It won't help your family. I appreciate that your heart is in the right place, and I mean that, but stop it. Concentrate on you. I'd have more respect for a man that concentrates 100% of his energy on getting better, more than 50% on getting better and 50% on politics. You know, surely this cancer has given you the opportunity to see, you realise what's important in life, and it's not work, and it's not popularity. So take stock of that. If, once you've beaten cancer, and I hope you do, because you're a fellow human, and I have compassion despite your suitcases of mistakes, a suitcase with broken wheels, in fact, full of mistakes in the past. It doesn't matter. I want you to get better. Everyone wants you to get better. I don't think even a heartless person that really despises you doesn't want you to get better. But if once you've beaten cancer, you want to be an astronaut, then good for you. I'll tie you to Chris Hadfield. I'll blast you into space myself. If after you've beaten cancer, you want to be a lion tamer, I'll buy the lion. If you want to be a Toronto cop, I'll buy the gun and the donuts, you know? Rob, if you want to come back after you've beaten cancer and be a Toronto taxi driver, I'll even teach you to be a crap driver. Do you want to be a Toronto cocktail barman on King West? I'll teach you how to pour a drink half the size of one in New York City and yet charge double the price and remain looking smug. I can teach you all of that. You can do anything. But right now, concentrate on the fact you've got cancer, stop being a politician and get better. It's what everyone wants, even people that love you, even people that do vote for you, have voted for you or even despise you. Moving on. It's the booze, sir. Vinnie White doing a double show. Working hard for your drunken entertainment. Hopefully you're drunk, not me. It is Thanksgiving after all. A sincere and warm, happy Thanksgiving to absolutely everyone listening. I feel very privileged to live in this country, and you've been very good to me. And it's always at this time of year, not only am I thankful for my rather high and ridiculously high quality of life compared to many countries in the world, but I'm also very pleased that you've been so warm and gracious in letting me into this country, and I do appreciate it very much. I've been here for 8 years. I'm getting used to it. Still a bit scared about the winter, but I'll get by. Every now and then you suddenly forget that you're not actually living in your own country when you've been here this long. Everything feels normal, but then you read something that makes you think, sorry, what, who, when, who, what the? And here's one of them. Nuclear plants must give anti-radiation pills to nearby residents. Yes. Are you listening to this near a nuclear power plant? Well, I've got news for you, baby cakes. Panic! Check! Residents and businesses near nuclear power plants must be provided with potassium iodide pills as a precautionary measure in case of an emergency, say the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission. They said this on Friday. The pills, which must be preemptively distributed in conjunction with local governments, protect against nuclear exposure, preventing the human thyroid gland from absorbing radiation. What a lovely thought this is. The measure was included as part of two new regulations published by the CNSC this week, intended to enhance regulatory requirements in nuclear emergency management. That's what the Watchdog's website said. Nuclear energy operators must provide pills to all residences, businesses and institutions that could be at risk of exposure from a radiation plume potentially released during an emergency. While the specific area covered by the definition differs from site to site, it generally is a radius of about 8 to 16 kilometres from a nuclear power plant. So if you live within 16 kilometres of a nuclear power plant, you'll get some guy coming round with a suit on giving you pills to take if there's a major nuclear emergency. Happy Thanksgiving! You know what gets me about this? Today, I was on a Via Rail train window. I was on a Via Rail train, but I was sat by the window. And if you're on a Via Rail train and you're sat by the windows at the back, this woman comes around and she did it to me this morning. She didn't do it to me this morning. That would be very rude. Although it would justify the ticket price. She came around this morning and she said, in the unlikely event that you need to break the window, use this hammer and then a cushion to push the window out. And she told me where the hammer was, how to break the glass, all the rest of it. And 90% of me thought, yeah, whatever, sweet cheeks. Yeah, whatever. It's never going to happen. Show me how to break a window in emergency, whatever. But there was about 10% of me that thought, Jesus Christ! I'm responsible for breaking a window! I'm going to be impaled on a spike in a disaster! So my point really is, we know that nuclear power plants are not really dangerous in countries with high standards like this one. We know that the chance of a Fukushima-style earthquake is low. But if I live next to a nuclear plant, giving me pills to take in the event of an emergency radiation leak makes me think of emergencies and radiation leaks. That's what it does. You can't say, where shall I put these pills? Well, we advise keeping them out of reach of children, of course, and only take them if there's a disaster at the nuclear plant. You can't have that sentence delivered to you without thinking about a disaster at the nuclear plant because of the words disaster at the nuclear plant. In fact, right now, if you're next to a nuclear plant and you're hearing me say disaster at the nuclear plant, there's a bloody good chance you've thought about a nuclear disaster, probably at the nuclear plant. So what I'm saying is, whilst I know you've got the right thing in mind, giving people pills in case there is fallout, what it might happen really is scare them. And if I live next to a nuclear power plant and a man came round and said, in the event of a nuclear disaster, I would like him to finish that sentence with, here's some clean underwear and a bloody helicopter. That's what I'd like. You know what I'm saying? Call me fussy. Unless, of course, those pills have cyanide in them. In which case, I'd quite literally shove them up my arse. In that event. I think that's how the warning goes. I think we'll stop talking about it in case people are getting a bit panicky. Now then, I want to talk to a man that knows all about chocolate. Joey, are you there?
I'm here, bud.
Nice to hear from you. Now, there's an event coming up where chocolate is featured in all of its magnificent and tasty forms. Tell us a little bit about it and when it is.
Well, it's the Toronto Chocolate Festival. It's our 9th annual. And we've been going now for, obviously, 9 years.
Have you been drinking wine as well?
Get that turkey triptide kicking in now. Or it's not your wine, I know that.
Yeah.
It's 3 weeks of various chocolate events throughout the city. Mm. We started actually yesterday with our chocolate high teas at the King Edward Hotel, which is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Each Thursday, Friday, and Saturday throughout the period of October 11th to November 2nd. Mm-hmm. And usually those are sold out. You would have to call the King Edward Hotel to book your spot. You can also go down to the website, to torontochocolatefestival.com, and download some sample coupons, et cetera, that you can take to your participating chocolatier, and they'll help you out. And those are free. You just download them.
Explain what a participating chocolatier is, because you say that as if I'm just going to pop out and get some milk. I've got to do an oil change on the truck, and obviously I'm going to pop down to my local chocolatier.
Yeah,
I'm not sure everyone's got one, have they?
Yeah, they do. There's a chocolatier probably in every few blocks.
Oh.
And if not, there's a store that sells chocolate. So
okay.
Somewhere. You'll find something.
Yeah.
But you're looking for good chocolate, and artisan's always the best place to go, where you get actual fresh truffles, you know.
Addicted to chocolate?
Pardon me?
Are you addicted to
it? No, not really. I mean, I love chocolate. Let's take that. I like chocolate, and I've learned a lot about chocolate in doing these festivals.
Mm.
And you have to, it's part of your research, and then all of a sudden I feel like I'm a specialist on it, which I'm not. But they're interesting people to deal with. They're very dedicated. They're in this business because they love doing what they're doing, and they come out with the best product, and they don't chintz on anything usually. They always try to make it better and bigger. And unfortunately, chocolate is getting to be more expensive.
Mm.
And I don't think the general public realizes that now. But they will in a few years when their $10 chocolate bar becomes a $29.95 chocolate bar.
Mm. I was in the States the other day, and I would also argue they're getting bigger. Not the good quality stuff that you're talking about, but there was
the price of cocoa has gone up 38% in the last year.
Whew.
And without cocoa, you don't have any kind of chocolate. I don't care whether it's Belgium, Swiss, whatever.
Is that a result of farming conditions or political climate?
There's a number of reasons. It's farming conditions. I mean, the ecosystem's not the way it used to be. It takes longer to grow these trees and get the yield for the farmers. And these are usually poor farmers. And to be honest with you, a lot of them probably don't give a damn whether they're cocoa or bananas or rubber trees, as long as they bring in money for their farm. And some of them are opting to forego cocoa and grow other things that bring the yield faster and safer. And so that's one reason. The other is people who like dark chocolate have created the demand, and it takes double the chocolate to make dark chocolate.
Oh, don't make me feel guilty about what I love.
It's your fault.
Oh, I hate you for doing this to me. Tell us very briefly
you're helping the price rise.
I am. Just me, old Muggins again, ruining the world. I always do. I was just going to enjoy it tonight. I'll eat some of that crappy American stuff.
Now, you know what? The Americans have some great artisan chocolatiers. Trust me, they have some great ones.
I think I'm being quite critical, really, of the mainstream stuff, but mostly whether it would be comedy, music, or anything else for that matter. So chocolate is no surprise. Very often the mainstream stuff isn't very good, but if you dig through, you can find some great stuff. Tell us about some of the events that are coming up during this chocolate festival.
All right, we have two signature events. The first one is our annual chocolate ball gala, which is this Thursday at the Eglinton Grand. And that's just one night of nothing but chocolate. Everything there is chocolate, whether it's savory food, it's chocolate infused, desserts, chocolate, that's basically it. And we are festival producers, so we put a lot of entertainment into our shows. So you're entertained while you're chow downing on all this chocolate. And then, of course, we make you dance and get you involved so that you can work it off, so you don't feel so guilty the next day.
Beautiful. Joey, I'm going to have to cut you a little bit short. Let me just finish with this. I'm so sorry to be running out of time. There is the Ultimate Chocoholic Dream, the 9/11 Chocolate Relay, the Toronto Luxury Chocolate Show, and the Chocolate High Tea, amongst other things, aren't there?
Yeah, the chocolate show is the big one. On November 2nd, Roy Thompson Hall, that's for the public. And that's from 11 to 7 o'clock, and we have like 40 vendors. And there you can check out all the different chocolatiers. Again, with savory foods, we have beer, we have wine, we have a mixture of everything going on during that day. You can go to torontochocolateshow.com and get all the information from there, no problem.
torontochocolateshow.com. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate taking time with you.
Cheers, bye.
Bye.
Lovely man. Lovely man. Made me feel a bit guilty about eating dark chocolate. Didn't know that it took twice the cocoa. Yet another pleasure that's become guilty pleasure. Toronto Chocolate Festival is coming your way. If you want to find out more, get on your googly poos and find out about all these amazing events. It's the October the 11th to November the 2nd. And as I said there, there's so many events. I won't bother listing them all. But if you like chocolate, you'd be insane not to get involved. News Talk 1010. We'll be right back.
This is the Vinny White Show on In-Depth Radio, News Talk 1010.
Nice! It's amazing, actually. Normally this show's an hour. Today it's 2 hours, and I still don't think it's long enough. There was a lot of guests today. I'll leave you with this, in case you didn't know. Great news. I like leaving you on good news, because it's Thanksgiving, and, well, we should be giving thanks for the wonderful world we live in, and sometimes there's dark areas of the world that bring us down and offer us quite severe worry and stress, but sometimes you see a shining light at the end of it all, and here is just one of those. Malala, who's a Pakistani, was shot at 2 years ago when gunmen from the Taliban got on her school bus and shot her in the head, shattering her skull, an attack she answered by becoming one of the world's clearest voices for girls' education. She really stood up against those brutal bully cowards. And I use the word cowards because that's exactly what the Taliban are, particularly when you're shooting a girl who was at the time 15 years old, shot her in the head, which gives you some window into the absolute insanity that can be religious fundamentalism. And, of course, this is astonishingly cowardly and stupid, foolish and barbaric act, almost beyond words and belief, in fact. She led the a speech at the United Nations on her 16th birthday. Who's amazed me and some, let's face it, slightly bigger names in showbiz like Jon Stewart, has actually gone on to ask Barack Obama about drones during her UN speech, which was just utterly inspiring. And if you ever get the chance, I would very much encourage you to read it. Why am I mentioning this girl? Well, she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize this week, which is absolutely fantastic news. And looking at what Malala has accomplished since the day she got on that bus, one can only imagine someday people lining up outside a polling station to vote for her. So, tales of adversity. News can be terrible, but every now and then you see a shining star come out of it. And I think we'll leave on that positive and groovy note and wish you a heartwarmingly very lovely and perhaps even mildly drunk Thanksgiving. Bye.